100 days on the place, yeah, man. It's a kick it, you know. That's right.
Yeah, me rolling and rock it to the beat, and me love the sound.
Oh, Chess, you can mess with the sound. Better grab your girl, your posse, and gather round.
Yeah, me rolling and bobbing and going like a mad man. Oh, the man got the sweet day of a 19 no long, so me say.
Hey, hey, Digital Sister is back. How are you? I hope you had a great week since I was last here chatting with you. And let's say hello to my new friends in Poland, my new friends in Hamburg, Germany, and Frankfurt, Germany, who are downloading the podcast, in Brazil, in Guadalajara, Mexico, and England, of course, and all across the United States and parts of Canada. I want to thank you for tuning in and continuing to help the podcast Digital Sister grow. Oh, and I also have to do a shout-out for my new friends, Danger Zone and Brian, who have found my podcast and who are new friends of my podcast, and I am friends of theirs. So again, all you guys, thanks so much for helping Digital Sister grow. I'm very excited about that. Well, let me just get right into it. Let's talk a little bit about Monique. Yes, the comedian Monique and her little bout of racism last week. First of all, you know, I was just stunned by the whole episode that she kind of, I think, blew out of proportion in terms of calling for a boycott of United Airlines. Because what happened is that she was on the plane from Chicago to New York going to tape two sessions of The View, you know, Barbara Walters' talk show that Star Jones is no longer on. But in any event, she was going to do, you know, her sister thing on The View. And so she's on the flight, and she was in first class, and her assistant was in coach. So apparently there was some problem because Monique had a hair dryer. Now, I don't know how big that hair dryer was because, you know, the way things are going today, you know, everything is so compact. I can't imagine that they couldn't have, you know, found a place to put it. I don't think she's carrying those old hair dryers that have the bubble, you know, that was very large. But in any event, there was a problem of storage for Monique's hair dryer. And, you know, ever since 9/11, I think you have to be very careful, and there's a way to talk to the stewardesses and the stewards. I shouldn't say stewardesses, but the flight attendants. Because, you know, they're not taking any crap, you know, after 9/11 and all the various things that happened with people trying to, you know, do things on the airline. So they're not taking any crap from people, no matter who it's coming from. So I would imagine that there was some problem of storing her hair dryer, and I would assume that there probably was some dialogue that, you know, wasn't cool with the flight attendant, and perhaps Monique, you know, did her diva thing a little bit and talked to the flight attendant in a way that the flight attendant, you know, it didn't go over too well. So rather than the flight attendant stand there and argue and get into words with Monique about this hair dryer and the lack of space to put the hair dryer on the plane, the flight attendant politely escorted Monique off the plane. And in the meantime, I think Monique was so outdone, she's probably, you know, more embarrassed than anything else, but, you know, she calls up Al Sharpton, who, you know, who I like, you know, he has his good points, don't agree with everything he says, but, you know, he has his good points, but she calls up Al Sharpton en route of being escorted off the plane to complain about, you know, her treatment by the flight attendant and that it was a racist incident and that, you know, she was calling for Al Sharpton to, you know, talk about this and to lead a boycott of United Airlines. Well, I think personally, you know, and some other people kind of thought, wow, all this over hair dryer. I think, you know, we should save Reverend Al Sharpton for more important things, and that's what he focuses on, too. But, you know, he took her call, and, you know, he talked a little bit about it on the Tom Joyner show. But interestingly enough, it happened last week, but, you know, there hasn't been anything else, at least I haven't seen anything else in the news about it. So perhaps that's one of those stories that's just going to, you know, die a natural death. And I would just say to people like Monique, you know, divas and stars, you know, be careful of how you talk to people who, quote, you feel are not at your level, you know, be careful with how you talk to people, because apparently that flight attendant, you know, turned the tables and let Monique know who was important at that particular time. It wasn't Monique the comedian. It was the flight attendant who didn't have to put up with her crap. So, you know, you have to remember where you are, and there's a way to talk to people. And I'm sure if the conversation were a little bit more polite, I am sure the flight attendant would have done everything possible to find a little place, storage place, to put Monique's hairdryer. There are plenty of compartments on that plane where they can store stuff. You know, they do it with oversized luggage all the time. But, you know, the flight attendant wasn't taking any guff from Monique, and she had had it, and she got her off the plane. Case closed. So, in the future, and I say that for everybody, you know, remember who you're talking to. There's a way to talk to people. You know, and there's a tone. So you have to be careful with how you do things, because, you know, if it's the wrong person, they're going to let you know that you are not the one. And that's what the flight attendant let Monique know. But let's move on. I was looking at USA Today again, as I do very regularly. And again, here's another review of another rapper's song. So it speaks to how I think important rap music is, and how mainstream in many ways it has become, because you can pick up a USA Today pretty much any day of the week, and there is some kind of article, some kind of story, some kind of review of a hip-hop artist. And just a couple of years ago, you never saw that in USA Today. So I think that's pretty cool, and it speaks to how important, really, hip-hop is, and how that majority media in some ways is giving credence to hip-hop by at least giving some reviews of the music. And this week they're talking about DMX and his new CD, Year of the Dog Again. And it's gotten a 3 out of 4. And he's very interesting because he also has a show on BET, which is Soul of a Man, talking about DMX as the man. I watched a little bit of it. Kind of interesting. He seems to be kind of a tortured soul, as many artists are. Seems to have lots of demons. Doesn't seem to mind bringing his own contradictions and his inner conflicts into his music. And he's kind of been out, in and out of jail for, you know, small stints with driving problems and things like that. But it was interesting in the show on BET that he, too, as I spoke about with Ghostface Killah a couple of podcasts ago, he, too, is in a state of feeling that he should reinvent himself, and looking at the fact that his name, DMX, alone brings on some problems. So he's in the process of, I think, reevaluating and looking at himself and thinking about, you know, his future, where he wants to go with his music, perhaps where he wants to go with his life. So I thought it was very self-reflective that you have a rapper who has built his reputation on, you know, being on the edge, being pretty tough, and, you know, his voice is very gravelly, and, you know, I like a lot of his music too. But here is a guy who's getting older. I think he's in his mid-30s right now. But he's looking at himself. He's looking at life. He's questioning if he's doing things the way he should be doing. But most importantly, he's looking at his name, DMX. He's looking at what that brings. And a lot of times what he's saying is that DMX brings problems. The name DMX brings problems. And he's really looking at evaluating if that's going to be his stage name forever, or will he use another name? Will he use his real name, which is Earl Simmons? So, you know, very interesting that a lot of the rappers are getting a little older, you know, in their, you know, 30s, mid-30s. Some of them are in their 40s, and a lot of them are having to reinvent themselves, having to be more self-reflective. as who they are as an artist and who they are as a person and who they are as a man. So I say kudos to DMX because it sounds like he's getting more introspective. It sounds like he's getting more mature. And it sounds like perhaps some of his demons are getting quieted so that he can concentrate on his music. But, you know, they gave a great review of the music, and he's got his new song is Lord Give Me a Sign, which ties in some religious aspects. And again, it's a song of a person who's, you know, looking for answers versus, you know, the egomania of Nas and Diddy, Puffy as he was known then, you know, putting out a record as if they were, you know, Jesus Christ being crucified, this whole thing, and, you know, taking themselves way too seriously. But, you know, DMX is in a good place because he's looking at things. And, you know, I wish him well, and I wish him great success with his music. And I hope he, you know, he's able to reinvent himself in the more positive way that I think he's going in. So kudos to DMX for maturing and wanting to do, you know, other things. You know, I've got to weigh in on this Mel Gibson situation because it's just very interesting that this has come up. He says he's been battling, you know, alcoholism for a long time, and he's now in rehab after this situation where he was just recently arrested on suspicion of, you know, driving under intoxication. It's just very, it's troubling in a sense because it's almost as if, how can I say this? He's out of control, and I think that's what's becoming apparent. And there have been rumblings about his feelings about Jewish people for, you know, quite some time now, and I think this situation has put it into the forefront. Now, a little history about Mel. I saw Mel in a movie called Tim way back in the late 70s when he was just beginning his acting career. And the film, again, was called Tim. And he starred in the film with Piper Laurie. It was an Australian film. And he played a mute. And he was, as I watched the film, he was such an incredibly good actor that you just felt for him, and you felt for how he fell in love with this, you know, this older woman. But it was a great movie, and I said to myself at that time, this is a good actor that we're going to be hearing about. I was very impressed with that. And I, you know, I liked the film. And then, you know, the Mad Max trilogy came out, and then you know, of course, the hugely successful Lethal Weapon franchise. So it's interesting to me, as well as to others, to hear his, I think, true attitudes about how he feels about, you know, Jewish people. And I tend to think that may be probably his biggest bias. You know, in his films, which I like about him, he's one of the few, you know, great actors who are doing lots of things, who can write their own tickets, who actively, you know, utilizes black actors in his films, which I think is great. And he portrays them in a good way. They're not portrayed, you know, overly as just criminals, but, you know, look at the character Murtaugh that Danny Glover plays, as he has played in all of the Lethal Weapons. You know, he's just a middle-class cop with a nice family, you know, a nice home. And, I mean, that's what Mel Gibson portrays. He doesn't portray, you know, black people all the time as just extreme criminals, as some actors do. So I, you know, I commend him on that. And in his film, I think Bird on a Wire, where he was a person who was underground in the identity program, you know, the witness program. And, you know, again, he had interaction with the black actor, you know, again, very thoughtful, very nice. He, you know, he comes off as a very nice guy. So it's just, I think, troubling that he's, you know, in this situation right now. It's troubling that he said what he said. You know, the rehab is going to deal with the alcohol, but I don't think the rehab is going to deal with whatever is truly in his heart. And I just kind of wonder about that because he's in Hollywood. I mean, my God, if you look at the names of most of the credits and people that are running a lot of the entertainment companies, I mean, they're Jewish. So, you know, he's kind of, I think, put his foot in it, and it will be very interesting to see how this all pans out. You know, he was very loud and boisterous at the time of the arrest, but he's been pretty quiet ever since then. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see what the mea culpa will be for him, how he's going to, you know, I guess come out with this, because he's coming out with this film about the Holocaust, which one of the companies has, you know, shelved, and it will be interesting to see what kind of backlash comes from this as a result of his comments. I mean, you can't call an arresting officer, female officer, sugar tits. You know, you can't, you know, threaten the cops and tell them that, you know, you own Malibu and you're going to screw him over for, you know, arresting him. I mean, you can't do that. You know, there's some question of whether or not he got preferential treatment, you know, being a celebrity. But, you know, I think he's just got to really look at himself, and hopefully he will deal with some of these issues, you know, and work through them, because it's not going to help him. It certainly isn't going to help his career. And, you know, there really isn't, you know, a place for that today. It's like, you know, get over it, Mel. Get over it. Just stay with being a good actor and a great director. And hopefully, you know, his stint in rehab will help him look at his feelings about particular groups, and maybe he will come out of this a better person. But he's really going to have to show, I think, something different, because people have felt that about him, and his comments have confirmed that he has some issues. So, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how this very popular actor is going to come out of this situation. You know, what will happen to him? And you see Barbara Walters has already, you know, weighed in and say she doesn't think she will ever see another Mel Gibson movie. And, you know, I'm sure many people feel the same way. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see what happens and how things pan out for him. But I hope he gets it together, because he's a good actor. He's a good force in the film industry. And as I said earlier, he's, you know, one of the rare powerhouse actors that, you know, readily uses African-American actors in his films, and I think portrays them in realistic ways. It's not just skewed negatively. So, you know, I hope he gets it together and just comes back out and starts making great movies again, because that's what he should be doing. Can you believe MTV is 25 years old? I can't believe it. It was launched on August 1st, 1981. And if you remember back then, as I'm afraid to say that I do, it was very much, of course, it was innovative. It was the beginning and the birth of the whole new media of videos, and how videos were created by the artists to sell their music. Because here was a format where, you know, you could see a little mini film about a song. And in August 1st, 1981, a whole new genre began with MTV. Remember back then, it was just a lot of white rock groups, and that's really who they created MTV for. But it really wasn't until Michael Jackson, you know, started making some rumblings back then. You know, Michael Jackson, when he was king of pop, really king of pop back in the day, made some rumblings and had to sue MTV to get his videos played, because, you know, they weren't interested in having any black artists on there, certainly not an R&B artist. And, you know, he had to sue MTV to get on there. And thank God he did, because he really opened up the door for really all other black artists to be played on MTV. And look at how MTV really pumped up Janet's career. I mean, Control came out like 20 years ago, and all her videos were just great. I mean, I loved all her videos and all the concepts that she utilized. And every single girl group or girl artist that is out today better be thanking Janet, because they're all patterning themselves after Janet. And they're also patterning themselves after Madonna, because she was also came onto the scene early on, back in September 14th, 1984. And let's talk about even before then with Michael Jackson, 1983, December 2nd. That was when Thriller came out. And I remember I was living in New York City back then, and I was at some club. It was some club off of Times Square. I can't remember the name of it. But they dropped a screen from the ceiling, and they played Thriller. And, you know, you were watching this mini film. I think it was probably about 15, 20 minutes at the time. I mean, it was fabulous. I remember just screaming, and everybody was dancing, and everybody just loved it. Thriller was the bomb when it came out. It was the bomb. And, you know, who would think watching Michael Jackson turn from a teenager into a werewolf would turn into such an incredible phenomenon. But also MTV was a place where cutting-edge technology was born. I remember Peter Gabriel's song Sledgehammer that came out in 1987. That was really the first song that started blending that quick animation. And then after that, you saw a lot of artists break animation into their videos. So, you know, Peter Gabriel was the first to do that. And then we have August 6, 1988, rap. You know, 7 years after Michael Jackson, after, you know, MTV started, and about 5 years after the Thriller phenomenon, that they had a show, Yo MTV Raps, that came on. It was a place to interview new rap stars and live studio performances, and, you know, kind of like the precursor of Def Jam comedy. So they finally realized at that point that rap was a very powerful medium, a new genre that wasn't going to go away. So they made room for that. And let's look at May 21st, 1992, the beginning of the reality series, because back then it was The Real World, and it was based in San Francisco. And that was the beginning of all of the reality shows that you see now on TV. That's all you see now on TV. But I remember watching that, The Real World out of San Francisco, and we all fell in love with the little cast of characters. And unfortunately, Pedro Zamora, who at the time was living with AIDS, he died from AIDS. So, you know, it was just a great, great show that I think people tended to really enjoy. But let's talk about September 9th, 1999. That was when we had Lil' Kim, Diana Ross, and Mary J. Blige up on the stage. And that's when Lil' Kim, you know, she was always notorious, but she was particularly notorious at that event because she wore this one-shoulder gown with her left breast exposed, but she had a pasty on it. And I think that was enough. And if you remember the picture of that VMA award show, you see Mary J. Blige, who was friends with Lil' Kim, she would look totally appalled and totally horrified that she was having to, you know, give this award with Lil' Kim like that. But what made the whole thing so funny was when Diana Ross, who reached over and cupped Lil' Kim's breast and just jiggled it and basically said, "Oh my God, I can't believe your mother let you out wearing this kind of thing." You know, she was playing the mom, so nobody got real bent out of shape with that. But, you know, here was, as we call it, Nipplegate. And then, you know, February 1st, 2004, the whole spectacle when, you know, Justin Timberlake, you know, pulled Janet Jackson's wardrobe and had the, quote, wardrobe malfunction. And she had a little pasty on, too. But, you know, there was such a big flap about that, it caused all kinds of problems. And then, you know, Justin Timberlake basically apologized and kind of left Janet out there to dry. But then, you know, Janet, she came back okay. And, you know, there was a little rumbling at first, but, you know, Everybody got over it. But MTV, I mean, it's cutting edge no matter what you feel about it. It's changed a little differently now. I don't think it's nearly as inventive as it was over the years, but it just was something that was new, just like hip hop, and took everything by storm. It created artists. It created people who really weren't singers. Videos made them look good, but when they tried to go out on tour, a la Paula Abdul, they couldn't really cut the mustard because they're not really singers. They were studio musicians. They were, video dancers. But it was that kind of thing that put it out there. And if you had a chance to do a live show, then you had to bring it and really show that you were a good artist. But anyway, happy birthday to MTV. It's something I think we've all grown up on. It's changed the way we look at things. It's changed our attention span because, it's click, click, click. People have very short attention spans today. I'm not saying that MTV created that, but the nature of the medium has made it so that you want things immediate. You want to see things quick. You want to see things that are interesting. You want to see things that are innovative. And that is what MTV delivered. Well, I think I'm just all talked out right about now. But again, I'm going to find some more interesting things for us to keep talking about. Please, please let me hear from you because I'm real interested to hear about what some of you think about Mel Gibson and his comments. And I'm very interested to see how many of you have some good memories about MTV that you would like to share. So give me a call on my audio line and leave me an audio message at 206-309-7325. Go to my homepage, which you'll see from downloading the podcast here, and do a shout out for me. Become a fan because I know you're listening. I know you like what I'm talking about because you're tuning in all over the world. So let me hear from you, and then I can share that with my listeners too. So in any event, I hope you have a great week, and I hope that you will continue to tune into Digital Sista, continue to pass the podcast along. Thanks to my friends in Boston, where I have a really big following, and in Denver, and out west in Seattle. Thanks again. I'll be back with you in a couple of days. Take it easy. Digital Sista signing out.
West side, we're riding. West side, the west side.